Happy to see you all here. If you came for the school funding show, you need to find something else to do today. We're not going to move 550 or 819. We will get back to them, I promise, Jim and Matt. This is not the end. It's just a little delay, that's all. Okay? So I don't think we'll even go to work session on 819 or 550 unless somebody has something pressing that we just have not heard yet about either one of those.
Okay. Yeah, right.
Not seeing a rush to the table. Let's get on with the rest of the agenda then. Let's open a work session. I don't know. Let's have a public hearing first on 3467. I'll open that. That was one that was referred to us that we've not heard yet. Oh, there you are. Representative Shoffler, come on forward. And while you're coming up, we'll ask Lizbeth to give us the overview.
Chairman Shatterly and committee members, for the record, I'm Lizbeth Martin Mahar with the Legislative Revenue Office. So with House Bill 3467A, what this does is it creates a new income or corporate excise tax credit for farmers and ranchers who employ low-wage workers. It requires that to qualify for the credit, the taxpayer must have at least one worker who is paid between $6.90 and $7.40 per hour. Specifies that the tax credit is equal to 50% of the wages paid, which are attributable to a mandatory increase in the minimum wage required by law. Provides the Department of Revenue with rulemaking authority to establish a methodology for attributing those wages that are paid above the minimum wage. Requires that the tax credit to not exceed the tax liability of the taxpayer each year. It applies to tax years beginning on or after January 1st, 2005, and sunsets on or after or on January 1st, 2010. So basically, this is revolving around our November 2002 general election when we approved Measure 25, which raised the minimum wage from $6.50 to $6.90 per hour in Oregon. But then it also allowed then indexing for changes in inflation in subsequent years. So this is beginning for those years in which the indexing was going to occur. I've gotten some preliminary numbers from the Department of Employment on the number of workers that are going to fall in this category, and I would say it's not really completely clear from the language in the bill exactly. On line 9 and 10 of the bill, it's saying that, you know, your hourly wage has to be $6.90 per hour, but it cannot exceed $7.40. But it's not clear whether or not these mandatory increases, if you had someone that originally was at $6.90 and they got bumped up to a higher wage because of, you know, the other workers being having their minimum wage increased 50 cents, if all other employees were also increased 50 cents, if those also would be considered then part of the group. And then it seems like that you would only have this indexing that would occur then between $6.90 and $7.40. So the minute a worker hit $7.40, then they wouldn't have these wages any longer indexed. But I don't think that's really clear in the bill. Again, there's rulemaking authority for the Department of Revenue, but it does make it kind of difficult to know exactly how many workers you're going to have that are going to fit in this category. So to begin with, in 2001, the employment data, the covered employment, found when you look on average that there's roughly 44% of all agriculture employees that are paid wages that are less than $7.40 per hour. And in 2001, then the average number of low-wage workers who were paid hourly wages less than $7.40 was roughly 19,624 workers, with a range between 28,291 workers in the summer months versus a low of 12,564. So there is quite a range of workers there that fall in this category, and that's what makes it kind of difficult. So, again, just looking at preliminary numbers, I found that roughly, since this is beginning in January 1st, 2004, you've got the 2004-05 fiscal year, which would cause a reduction in this 2003-05 biennium, and roughly it would be at least $1 million to begin with.
All right. Representative Shoffler, good morning.
Thank you. Good morning to all, and Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for having a hearing on this, and that answered some of my questions, too. While the committee staff explained what the bill does to as far better than I'm able to. I'm not a lawyer, and I'm not a tax credit or revenue system expert, but while hearing the bill that would repeal the cost of living adjustment that we voted in last year in the Business, Labor, and Consumer Affairs Committee, I heard compelling evidence from the agricultural community how this is going to hurt them. Now, I'm a strong supporter of that adjustment to the minimum wage, and I will continue to be so. But I wanted to try and find something that was going to help farmers in Oregon, because unlike all other businesses and industry that have folks at this kind of wage level, or any wage level for that matter, farmers and ranchers, because of our market system, are incapable of passing that government-mandated increase in wage onto the consumer. If I own a tavern or a restaurant or a small business, and I employ workers in this category that are going to, and I'm mandated to increase their wages, which once again I support that, I can just pass that on to the consumer. I know that there's some competition problems with that maybe, but since everybody in Oregon is experiencing the same thing, that argument didn't really hold much water with me anyway. But the farmers aren't in that position, and I have a very soft spot in my heart for farmers. Both my grandparents and my uncles and my cousins still do. My grandparents did, my uncles and cousins in Minnesota still do, are dairy farmers. And I grew up in Iowa, where I worked with friends and neighbors on their farms and worked right with these folks and saw the struggles that they go through every day to provide us with food. And I just wanted to do something to help them, and I think this does this. Let me see here. I believe the tax credit and the tax expenditure issue is very much in the forefront today, and I think all those tax credits and expenditures do need to be reviewed carefully, and maybe this would fall into some kind of adjustment of those so that we could bring in more revenue. But for every action government takes, there's a reaction. And once again, farmers are stuck in this, whereas they cannot pass that on. And I felt that since we were going to impose this on businesses in Oregon, I just wanted to try and find some relief for them. Another thing that I thought was good and positive about an idea like this, we've all heard politicians and community leaders talk about helping rural economies here in Oregon. And what this will do is keep money in the hands of farmers and ranchers in rural, and they will go into their rural community and spend that money on equipment or whatever, and help those economies and those rural communities, rather than just sending the money here to Salem for us to do whatever it is we want to do it with it. And that also, there really is a huge divide between rural and urban Oregon. And me being a urban Democrat politician, I felt that this would also do some social good by reaching out to farmers and letting them know that not everyone in Portland hates farmers or is against farmers or wants to just lord over our book smart policy over agriculture and folks that live and work in rural Oregon. So I thought I thought it would hopefully help bridge that gap as well. Most of my testimony was covered by the committee staff there as far as what this does and doesn't do. But one of the things I wanted to clarify, there would be a floor of $6.90 for this. And as the mandatory adjustments in the minimum wage went up, that floor would remain there. And as the minimum wage went up, that 50% would be 50% of everything above the $6.90, as I understand it, until the sunset, where we'd review it and then maybe adjust that floor so that it didn't turn into, 20 years from now, some great big huge tax credit that may not be best for our revenue system here in the state of Oregon. But I was surprised to hear that it was such a small number of $1 million. I know when we're looking at government expenses as low as $500 here in the state, $1 million does turn into a lot. But anyway, if that's about it, if there's any other questions, I would attempt to answer them. And I appreciate you taking a look at this.
All right, other questions for Representative Shoffler? No? We've got some more testimony to follow. You may.
Yeah, I, I'm my wisdom and leadership is much needed in the Business, Labor, Consumer Affairs Committee right now. Yes. So I'm going to go down to that. But and interestingly enough, I find some of my good friends coming up here to testify against this, that I still love them, so don't be too hard on them. And I appreciate your time.
All right, thank you very much
for
coming down.
Have a good day.
All right, let's bring up Don Schellenberg. And Deborah Buchanan, I won't call you up now, but do you have anything you need to say as far as revenue goes? Okay.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Don Schellenberg, representing Oregon Farm Bureau, here today in support of the passage of House Bill 3467 in general. Representative Schaffler deserves an A-plus for creativity. Not because this is some weird idea. No, he deserves the grade because in the minimum wage indexing issue, he gets it. He understands that there's a disconnect between what the grower is able to pay the farm worker and what the market pays the farmer and what the public is willing to pay for food so the farmer has the ability to pay the farm worker. The problem is that the public may pay higher and higher prices for food, but it never gets to the farmer so he can give it to the farm worker. What Representative Schaffler has created here is a way to connect those dots. Under this plan, the minimum wage continues to rise. The farmer pays the increased wages up front, and then the farmer recoups the direct increased cost in the form of a tax credit. The tax credit essentially comes from the state general fund into which the public pays their taxes. The result is the public pays the bill, the farm worker gets the higher wages because of the indexing in the minimum wage, and the farmer is held harmless, which is what has to happen if the farmer is going to stay in business and provide jobs for the farm workers. There are a few small problems, though. The farmer has to actually make a profit in order to take advantage of the credit. And that's a little bit hard to do these days. Second, the bill is drafted as a 50% tax credit. In order to hold the farmer harmless, the credit has to be 100%. Death by a thousand cuts at 50% as opposed to death immediately if we don't get anything at all. Anything less than that, the farmer still can't afford. And third, the money comes as a tax expenditure from the budget that is severely strapped, and you're all well aware of that. And I'm sure that's why this bill had a subsequent referral to this committee. In any case, the concept is right, and I want to thank Representative Schaffler for promoting that and introducing this bill. Farm Bureau would ask that the bill be amended to make that 100% tax credit, and then that the committee pass the bill to the House floor with the due pass recommendation. Be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Questions, Representative Berger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Don, I'm not sure if you're the right person to answer this, but I'm a little concerned by the floor and ceiling language in here, that you're creating a disincentive for a farmer to pay a valued employee more, because if they go over the ceiling, they lose their tax credit.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Berger, that's a good point. I don't know how to answer that question either. I've thought about that. Of course, I didn't design the bill,
yeah.
And we appreciate Representative Schaffler for doing that. I don't know how to answer that question either. I understand that. When it has the, I don't know if the ceiling is the problem or I don't know what it takes to correct that.
Well, yeah, it's a cliff, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah
it is. Point,
and it goes away.
Yeah.
And so you could phase it out, I suppose. That gets it more complicated, but maybe that's what Deborah can talk about. But yeah, that is a problem. I mean, just when you get to that, once you get to that point, all of a sudden it's gone completely, and it's.
You might, if I could continue, you might, if you're watching these things and you have a pool of employees, say, well, I can't pay anybody over this ceiling, or I'm going to lose this tax credit, and so it has an effect of sort of disincentivizing, playing, rewarding good employees that you want to keep. That's my only. And you don't really have to answer, Don. I just want to bring this forward.
Well, Mr. Chairman, there's a couple things here that play into all of this, and then maybe not directly related to your comments, but Representative Schaffler mentioned the fact that farmers aren't able to cover their costs automatically. Not only that, we're in a world market where you're talking about small business and retail locally has the ability to do that. There's still competition, but everybody has to do it. You're all on the same playing field. That's the problem with agriculture products. We're on a world market. We're not on the same playing field. Where they pay $6.90 a day, we have to pay $6.90 an hour. Where they pay $6.90 a day in other countries that produce the same thing that we do. So that makes it very difficult for us to be able to compete. There was another point. I can't remember what it was.
Anything else for Mr. Schellenberg? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Patrick Green. I'm going to step out of the shadows and actually speak today, huh?
That's right. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Patrick Green with the Oregon AFL-CIO, and I'd like to register our opposition with House Bill 3467. I think it's safe to say that since it reaches $1 million, the Revenue Coalition would be opposed to it as well. Okay, I'm seeing nods. For the record, there were nods in favor. I'd like to start out by saying that one of the reasons for our opposition is actually exactly what you had said, Representative Berger, that there it appears to be a disincentive to raise wages, particularly, you know, as you head towards 2010, you would want to keep wages low enough that you would get the tax credit. We think this provides a dangerous precedent to basically pay wages on behalf of private employers. And the question is also why this industry is opposed to other ones. For example, this industry actually, according to the study that the Revenue Coalition has done, gets $311.3 million in tax credits already. And as an industry, that's second only to timber. This is an industry that our state already heavily subsidizes. There's no means test. This isn't targeted to the family farm. This is targeted to agriculture. And agriculture can mean a lot of different things. When I grew up in rural Illinois, there was a farmer who had just a small plot of land that we could walk across growing soybeans. This wasn't big international national agriculture, and this bill would essentially give them a subsidy as well. And so as far as the rural or urban divide, the minimum wage increase in other committees has been sort of waved around like a bloody shirt, as if this was rural Oregon versus urban Oregon, and urban Oregon imposed this on rural Oregon. But the minimum wage increase passed all over the state, including up and down the coast, which I would not consider urban Oregon. It's rural Oregon. It passed passed in parts of eastern Oregon, southern Oregon. So this was not something that was basically imposed by Multnomah and Lane County, which is often the complaint. It passed all over the place because rural Oregon needs good jobs and needs increased wages, which is one of the reasons we wanted to index the minimum wage in the first place. With that, we would object to amending this bill to making it 100% subsidy of the increase in the minimum wage that the Farm Bureau said. And they're right. Basically, the public does pay the bill. We could pay it out of the general fund and pay with it. Basically, we're going to pay this with school days. I mean, we could do that. We could either pay this with school days or pay this in the grocery aisle. And so this would shield this industry alone from the cost of living increase in the minimum wage, and we're opposed to that. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Mr. Green? I guess not.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Deborah Buchanan, do you want to speak to this?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Deborah Buchanan, Department of Revenue. Mr. Chair, some of the issues have already been raised, I think, around the ambiguity in the language. The credit has been described as applying to a range of wages from $690 to $740 per hour. That is one way to read it. However, you might also read this to say that you simply have to employ a person in that wage range. There's nothing to stop you from claiming the credit for other employees that may have a different wage. However, the broad rulemaking authority given to the department would allow us to write rules that address that. And then I guess my second concern is that broad rulemaking authority. It seems to require the department to make some subjective determinations about what is in the mind of the farmer, the employer, in granting a wage raise, whether it was for performance or whether it's because of the minimum wage increase. So there are some just concerns about the language that we have. One way to address that, if the intent is to allow the credit only for those required increases due to inflation adjustments, the credit might simply be based on that, and that any employee who's receiving minimum wage, the farmer could take a credit for the difference between the prior year's minimum wage and the current year's minimum wage and address it that way. That would take out the need to determine whether wage increases were attributable to that or to some other reason. So those would be our concerns with the bill.
Okay. Do you have any comments on the cliff versus the phase down or phase out of this credit?
Mr. Chair, I don't know how you address that unless you do simply base it on the differences in the prior minimum wage and the current year minimum wage. That does not, however, get to employees that are making a little bit more and that would presumably qualify under this bill.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Questions for Deborah Buchanan? Does anybody else wish to be heard on House Bill 3467? Seeing no rush to the table, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 3467. And let's open a work session on House Bill 2188. Good morning.
Good morning.
Why don't you go ahead and get us started? Bring us up to speed. It's been a while since we heard this.
No, it hasn't been. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Richard Yates with Legislative Revenue. Basically, what we have is a bill which cleans up the mess that was left by repealing, essentially, the privilege taxes on the harvest of timber. So you have sections that are related to bringing assessment up to 100% of either the lesser of maximum assessed value or specially assessed value as determined by the Department of Revenue. In both eastern and western Oregon, you have the repeal of the privilege taxes in both eastern and western Oregon, and you have the repeal of the small tract option tax in western Oregon. And then the last 10 or 12 pages are simply cleaning up the statutes that referred to those sections that have been repealed, and generally housekeeping in nature.
Okay. Well, let's see. We held this over in part. We were waiting to see what was happening with 2197, and it looks to me like that's going to be moving in one form or another down in the Senate. Norm Miller or Wally Rutledge, let's see, is Wally here? I don't see Wally. Norm, do you want to? Okay, yeah, Joe Misek, come on up and just make sure that we're all fully informed on this and let the committee ask any questions before we... There aren't any amendments on this, right, Nick?
There are none.
Okay. As I recall, I think the upshot of the testimony we heard last time this was before us was that with the House Bill 2197, this becomes sort of a... I would say must have follow-up to that, cleaning up the rest of the statutes and conflicts and otherwise. Is that basically correct?
Basically, must have either way.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's true, yeah.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, for the record, Norm Miller, Oregon Department of Revenue. That is correct, yeah. That it's a must have either way. That in essence what happened was that the privilege tax, the tax rate went to zero, but all the requirements for the tax, in other words, sending out forms, bringing in forms, people being required to file forms, those all stay. So what this bill does is gets rid of those requirements. So we need to have it either way.
Good point.
Right.
Joe, did you have anything to say?
No.
Oh, well, then what are you doing? I know, I called you. Representative Barnhart.
Well, I was going to ask what the word inoperative meant, and I think I just learned. Inoperative means zero rate.
Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, that's correct.
Thank you.
Okay, anybody else?
I guess I would say that you'll have to deal with conflict amendments between these two bills if they both go out. And that'll just be something that comes back either on the concurrence from the Senate.
Sure, they could put those conflict amendments in this bill over in the Senate, so that's fine. All right. Thank you very much. We are in work session.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Scott.
I move House Bill 2188 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Scott moves House Bill 2188 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion on the motion? Okay, please call the roll.
Representative Barnhart.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Barr.
Aye.
Pass.
Aye.
Hobson.
Aye.
Pass.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Williams.
Aye.
Aye. House Bill 2188 goes to the floor with a due pass recommendation. We need a carrier. Mr. Representative Scott, it's yours. With that, we close the work session on House Bill 2188, and I believe we are adjourned.